Tryon said. Emily studied Vesperian's son as they walked up to the meeting room. He was tall, but otherwise he looked like a younger version of his father. And yet there was a nervous energy about him that would have worried her if she'd met him 5 years ago. He looked as though he would lash out at any moment. She reminded herself firmly that she had more than enough magic to stop him in his tracks if he tried anything stupid. "The will has been read," Vesper said once they were seated. He had a plummy voice that put Emily's teeth on edge. "The controlling interest in Vesperian Industries has been passed to my client. I must therefore ask that you refrain from any further disruption until my client takes possession of his heritage." Emily cursed mentally. She should have asked Harriman to join them. He was the one with real authority. Marcus leaned forward. "I have a question," he said. "Are you filing a legal demand that we stop inspecting the account books?" "They're mine," Tryon said. "I'm the one who decides what happens to them." "The information contained within the accounts may also be confidential," Vespers added smoothly. "My client and his investors would be most displeased if certain details were revealed."
Emily exchanged glances with Caleb, then spoke. "Has your client been following the details of his father's investments?"
Tryon colored. "My father handled all such matters himself."
He stood and started to pace the room, as if a chair couldn't contain his nervous energy any longer.
"I was groomed to succeed him."
He turned to look at Emily.
"And I will not allow anyone to get in my way."
Marcus snorted.
"Do you understand the codes your father used in his account books?"
"There are accountants to handle the details," Tryon insisted. "That's what they're paid to do."
"Yes, I suppose there are."
Marcus looked at Vespers.
"The Guild Council granted the Investigation Commission wide latitude to open the account books and carry out a complete audit of Vesperian's finances. As you are no doubt aware, such a commission can only be overruled by the Guild Council itself."
"Such a commission is only legal if the city itself is at risk," Vespers pointed out.
"The city is at risk," Emily said quietly.
"Nonsense!" Tryon thundered.
He glowered at her.
"My father loved this city."
"The figures are clear," Marcus said. "Tomorrow your father's corporation will be expected to pay out upwards of 20,000 crowns in repayment of investments, not to mention his debts to various industries. So far, we have been unable to uncover anything like enough funds to cover the debts. Your father's total free cash, as far as we have been able to determine, is somewhere around 2,000 crowns. A respectable amount, to be sure, but not enough to cover his debts."
"Impossible!" Tryon thundered. "My father was a great man, his dreams destroyed by small-minded fools."
"The preliminary report will be presented tomorrow."
Marcus's voice was even.
"We may uncover more cash reserves, but I have my doubts. Vesperian could have settled most of his debts if he had the cash."
"You're lying," Tryon said.
His gaze switched to Emily.
"This is all your fault, you—"
Vespers elbowed him.
"What my client means to say," he said smoothly, "is that it was reported that you made considerable investments in the track."
"Such reports are lies," Emily said. "I invested no money."
"My father wouldn't lie," Tryon said. "I demand—"
"You can make your demands to the Guild Council," Marcus said. "I'm sure they will make the best possible decision once you've stated your case. Until then, the investigation will continue."
"I'll own your bank by the end of the week," Tryon snapped. "You're not an accountant. You're not even an advocate. The lawsuit will—"
"I would advise you to grab what you can and flee the city."
Marcus's expression twisted into something that could charitably be called a smile.
"But seeing you probably wouldn't take my advice, I won't bother."
Tryon stamped up to the table and glared at him.
"This is an outrage!"
Marcus lifted a hand. Emily felt a spell forming a moment before it drained back into nothingness.
"No," he said.
His voice was so calm that Emily knew he was faking it.
"What is an outrage is your father building a financial scheme that will wipe out the savings of countless people who trusted him. Now you can leave here peacefully, or I'll turn you both into frogs and dump you in the nearest pond."
Vespers rose and stalked out of the room. Tryon gave Marcus a nasty look, shot a nastier one at Emily, then followed his lawyer. Emily resisted the urge to hex him in the back as he left. Barely. Beside her, Caleb was bristling. She took his hand and squeezed it lightly.
"He'll go straight to the council," Marcus predicted. He sounded oddly amused. "But they'll probably do their best to ignore him."
"Good."
Caleb looked at Emily.
"How long do we have?"
Emily glanced at her watch. 15 hours, she said. "That's when the notes fall due." Chapter 20. Despite Caleb's tender touch and a pain-killing potion she'd kept in her pouch, Emily's headache had only grown worse by the end of the day. Vesperian's account-keeping had been so poor that it was impossible to say with any certainty just what he owned, let alone what it was worth and who needed to be paid. Even Harmon's snide remarks had drained away as he and his staff struggled to figure out the truth. There was no hope of a quick resolution.
"We could sell everything we know he owns," she said to Caleb, "but it wouldn't raise enough money to buy back the notes."
"And the richest and most powerful investors would want their money back first," Caleb pointed out. "Everyone else would be screwed."
Emily winced. Caleb was right. The ordinary investors would be lucky if they got anything back. She doubted selling the steam engines and railway lines would bring in much money, not when it would take years for them to repay the investment. The guildmasters might reclaim their money, but everyone else? She closed her eyes in pain. Everyone who had trusted Vesperian with their life savings was about to lose everything. She peered out of the window over the city, wondering what would happen when the notes finally came due. There were already rumors. What would happen when those rumors were confirmed? The crowd outside the office had grown, despite the best efforts of the guardsmen. They hadn't been able to convince the crowd to disperse, even as night began to fall. Emily didn't blame them for not pushing harder. The guardsmen were outnumbered 50-1, and besides, some of them probably had relatives in the crowd.
"Lady Emily," Harriman said.
Emily turned as the clerk entered the small office. The gray man didn't look very tired, even though he'd put in more work than any of the accountants and bankers.
"We are not going to find a quick answer."
Emily nodded. Vesperian seemed to have almost no money. There were no secret bank accounts, no caches of pre-banking coins. Everything he'd collected, it seemed, had been invested into the railway or used to pay his older debts. It certainly didn't look as though Vesperian had intended to flee the city, taking everything he could carry with him. But there hadn't been much he could carry.
"It looks that way," she agreed.
"So far, his total debts appear to be upwards of 70,000 crowns," Harriman continued. "His total assets, assuming they were sold at purchase price, come to 10,000 crowns at most."
"And they won't be sold at purchase price," Emily finished. Vesperian had driven prices up, simply by buying everything he could get his hands on. The price of iron had quintupled over the last 2 months alone. "We'll be lucky if we get back a tenth of what he paid for them."
"I'm afraid so."
Harriman looked downhearted, just for a moment.
"I will have to present this to the council tomorrow. It will not go down well."
"No," Emily agreed. She shook her head, tiredly. "I have no solution."
"Nor do I."
Harriman nodded towards the window.
"Everyone who can leave the city is going now."
"I know," Emily said. She yawned, wishing, more than anything, that she could lie down in Caleb's arms and sleep. The headache, never far from her mind, kept pounding away inside her skull. Her entire body felt drained.
"I'm going to have the building sealed for the night," Harriman said. "The most important documents will be transferred to a bank vault for safekeeping. There are already suggestions on the streets that Vesperian kept his money here."
He sighed.
"I suggest you get some rest. You may be called upon to testify tomorrow."
Emily was too tired to argue. "I'll see you tomorrow." She glanced at Caleb. "Shall we go?"
"Please," Caleb said. "We both need to rest."
The roar of the mob grew louder as they, and the rest of the staff, emerged from the building. Emily felt the primal waves of rage and helplessness washing through the crowd, driving them into a frenzy. Someone had passed out bottles of beer and wine, perhaps in the hope that the crowd would drink itself into a stupor. Or perhaps, the cynical side of her mind added, they wanted a riot. The guardsmen kept their hands near their weapons, exchanging nervous glances as the mob roared its anger. Emily couldn't help noticing that there seemed to be fewer guardsmen on the street. She wondered, as she readied her magic, just how many of the guardsmen had gone home to protect their families. They didn't sign up for this, she thought numbly. She held Caleb's hand, gritting her teeth as the roar grew louder. The railway station was also under siege, hundreds of men and women gathered outside despite the curfew. Emily suspected the council had made a mistake by ordering everyone to be inside by nightfall, even though she knew they'd had little choice. They lacked the manpower to enforce it, let alone any more draconian measures they might have in mind. Even with the hands of justice backing them up, and there were no hands in sight, the guard was still badly outnumbered. The roar faded as they made their way through the crowd and down the street. She didn't envy the clerks, many of whom were carrying documents to Banker's Row. Marcus accompanied them, along with a handful of other magicians, but she had a nasty feeling that there were magic users who had also lost their investments. Sienna might have banned her children from investing in the railway, yet others might not have been so prudent. In hindsight, she should have asked if Alba and her family had invested. A dull red glow appeared in the distance, casting an eerie light over the city. Emily tensed, glancing from side to side. The handful of people on the street, hurrying home, she assumed, didn't look threatening. And then she realized the glow was coming from the richer part of the city. She looked at Caleb. "What's that?" Caleb's voice was grim. "Fire." Emily swallowed hard. Beneficence had a fire service, she'd been assured, but would the firemen get to the blaze in time to save whatever was burning, or would the flames spread out of control? The city was built of stone, but that might not make a difference if the wind fanned the flames. If the poorer parts of the city caught fire, hundreds of thousands of people would die or be rendered homeless. The fire service would just have to wait for the blaze to burn itself out. "I can't see what's burning," Caleb added. "But Vesperian's mansion is over there." "Yeah," Emily agreed. Caleb was probably right. She had a feeling he was right. Vesperian's mansion was the most logical target for the mob, after all. The city guard might not have had the manpower to protect the mansion. Or, perhaps, they would not have tried. Letting the mob run riot for a few hours might just burn off its energy before it started rampaging through the city at random. Who knew? Perhaps the guardsmen had studiously looked the other way. They'd lost money, too. She wondered, as they turned down a street, if Tryon and his mother had escaped. They'd been advised to flee, but had they? She wondered if she would have fled, if she'd found herself in such a trap. It was a trap, too. Tryon owed more money than he could possibly repay. The smart move would be to grab whatever he could and run for his life before the mob caught him. Caleb muttered a curse under his breath as they turned a corner. A nasty-looking crowd had gathered outside a closed bar, yelling loudly for the bartender to come out and start pouring the booze. Emily didn't blame the bartender for not showing, not when the crowd looked disinclined to pay for the drinks. A number were already drunk, singing tunelessly as they poured more and more beer down their throats. Others picked up makeshift weapons and hacked at the door, trying to break it down. Emily hoped, prayed, that the bartender and his family didn't live above the bar. But judging from the other bars she'd seen, she suspected it was a forlorn hope. The bartender wouldn't be able to afford lodging away from his bar. The crowd rippled. "A whore!" someone shouted. "A whore!" Emily felt a flicker of panic as the crowd surged towards her. They didn't know who she was, part of her mind noted. They certainly didn't care. They'd just seen a young woman with only one protector. They thought they could just brush Caleb aside and do whatever they liked to her. She stepped forward, casting a spell. The magic billowed around her, then lashed out, picking up the crowd and throwing them down the street. She felt a pang of guilt as some of them landed badly, breaking bones. She forced the guilt away, reminding herself that the crowd wouldn't have hesitated to gang-rape her, then beat her to death. And he would have killed Caleb, too. The magic grew stronger, slamming into the stunned crowd. How dare they? How dare they? A mundane woman wouldn't have stood a chance if they'd caught her, no matter who or what she was. Emily felt her anger grow stronger, felt the ground shaking under her feet. Caleb caught her arm. "You'll bring down the whole street. You have to stop." Emily rounded on him, then caught herself as she controlled her rage. She'd nearly lost control. The magic faded slowly. A roof tile fell to the ground with a clatter. Further down the street, she thought she heard something shatter into a million pieces. The remainder of the crowd, those who could still walk, ran for their lives. Emily couldn't help feeling, with a flicker of grim satisfaction, that they weren't drunk now. She walked onwards, looking down at the moaning bodies. No one had died, as far as she could tell, but a number definitely had broken bones. Their blood looked black in the darkness. She wondered, numbly, if she should try to help them. But they'd intended to rape her, then rip her to shreds. And if they'd managed to catch a defenseless victim, they would have done just that. She told herself firmly that she shouldn't feel sorry for them. Caleb said nothing as they reached the end of the street and hurried on, leaving the bodies behind. Sorcerer's Row came into view a moment later, guarded by strong wards and a team of patrolling magicians, although it didn't look as though the community was in any danger. Emily wasn't particularly surprised. If she'd been able to flatten a crowd of rioters with a single spell, more experienced magicians would be able to do a great deal more damage to anyone stupid enough to attack them. Caleb spoke briefly to the sorcerer on duty at the corner, then waved Emily down the street. There were so many wards drifting through the air that Emily suspected some of them were actually weakening the others. "No one trusts his closest neighbors to ward his house," Caleb muttered when she mentioned it. "Too much espionage amongst magic users." He tapped on the door, which opened. Karen stood just inside, holding a silver knife in one hand and a spell in the other. Frida stood behind her, looking bored. She hurried forward as Emily entered and gave her a tight hug, then released her a moment later. Emily undid her cloak, placed it on the hanger, and followed Frida into the living room. Croce sat at the table, writing in a journal. There was no sign of anyone else.
"Marion hasn't come home," Karen said to Caleb. "Mum and Dad haven't returned either."
"Dad's got a new job." Caleb looked up, sharply. "Where did Marion go?"
"I don't know," Karen said. "She said she was going to visit Lepta."
"She couldn't stay there after sunset," Caleb said. He sounded alarmed. "Take care of Emily, please. I'll go look for her."
Emily glanced up at him. Her head was still throbbing.
"Do you want me to come with you?"
"You need your rest," Caleb said shortly. He pulled his cloak over his head. "She's just down the road. I'll be quicker on my own."
"Okay,"
Emily said, torn between annoyance and understanding. She knew Caleb meant well, but she didn't want him to go out alone. Sorcerer's Row would be safe enough, she was sure, yet...
"I'll be here."
"Don't go up to Starry Light," Karen said. "Vesperian's mansion is on fire."
Emily looked at her.
"How do you know?"
"I saw the flames from my window," Karen said. "The entire building is on fire."
"Someone probably used a burning spell," Croce commented. His voice was rough, as if he was as tired as Emily herself. "The flames looked impossible to quench without powerful magic, but they don't seem to have spread beyond the mansion or its grounds."
"Be careful, Caleb," Karen said. "There are riots on the streets."
"We know," Caleb said.
He snorted rudely. "I don't think she'll have gone outside Sorcerer's Row." He shook his head.
"Why did you even let her go?"
"It's just down the street," Karen whined. "You know what she's like when she really wants something."
"You should have stuck her feet to the floor or sealed the wards," Caleb said, rubbing his forehead. "This isn't the time for a temper tantrum."
"She's not had a good time of it," Karen said. "You've been away,
so have you," Caleb snapped back.
He caught himself with an effort.
"I'll be back soon, hopefully with her," he said. "If Mum comes back, let her know where I've gone."
If, Emily thought. The council might have found something else for her to do. She saw the worry on Caleb's face and silently forgave him. His family was important to him, even though she knew he sometimes wondered how he and his siblings could come from the same parents. They were different in so many ways. But Caleb would fight for them, if necessary, and they would do the same for him.
She couldn't help feeling a flicker of envy as Caleb turned and hurried to the door. The thought of having siblings who loved her... Karen passed her a mug of hot chocolate, then left the room. Croce looked at Emily and Frida for a long moment before following his sister. Emily's tired mind wondered if it was appropriate for Croce to share a room with two unmarried girls, even though one of them was courting his older brother. Who knew how his parents would react? Poorly, she thought as she sipped the drink. Croce and Frida are both of marriageable age.
It's been a long day, Frida said.
She sounded tired and sullen.
What happened to you?
You can come help with the accounts if you like, Emily said, feeling another stab of tired guilt.
Frida had been trapped in the house all day, unless she decided to sneak out, despite the chaos on the street. She did have homework to do, but that wouldn't keep her occupied indefinitely.
Right now, my head feels like there's a troll living in it.
Ouch!
Frida reached out and touched Emily's hand.
Is it going to be bad?
Very bad.
Emily rubbed her eyes. The streets are on edge. Noon tomorrow, when the bills come due, there isn't going to be any money to pay. And then all hell will break loose. Frida gave her a searching look.
Should we leave?
Emily frowned, honestly unsure. She'd promised General Pollock she would stay until the mourning period was completed, but she had no idea what had happened to the coffin, let alone the farewell ceremony. Sooner or later, she'd either have to go back to Whitehall or resign herself to repeating fifth year. And she didn't think there was anything she could do to help Beneficence. There were no necromancers to kill, no dark wizards to catch. All she could do was watch helplessly as vast sums of money evaporated. She rubbed her forehead. She didn't have the money to buy back the notes at face value. She didn't know anyone, save for King Randor, who did. And his assistance would come with strings attached. Beneficence might prefer being broke to bending their knee to a king. Which won't help anyone who's starving, she thought coldly. They'll be too hungry to care who's in charge. Frida nudged her.
Emily?
Emily jumped. She'd nearly drifted off.
Emily?
Frida touched Emily's hand again.
Should we leave?
Not yet, Emily said.
She didn't want to leave Caleb, and she knew he wouldn't leave, not until his family was safe. And she knew neither Sienna nor General Pollock would turn their backs on their city.
I promised I'd stay until Casper was buried.
And I promised I'd stay with you.
Frida squeezed Emily's hand.
And I think you'd better go to bed.
Thanks.
Emily yawned, covering her mouth hastily. First Harriman, now Caleb and Frida.
Why does everyone want me to get some rest?
Because you need it, Frida said.
She helped Emily to her feet.
And because tomorrow might be a better day.
Emily shook her head. She knew that wasn't going to be true. Chapter 21 Emily could hear Sienna's voice echoing up the stairs as she dressed and then led Frida down to breakfast. Marion was in trouble, judging by the racket. It sounded as though Caleb hadn't managed to find her last night. Emily searched her memory, but she couldn't recall hearing Caleb coming back to the house. Had he spent all night looking for his sister? She hoped he'd managed to get some rest, too.
"You're nowhere near old enough to be wandering the streets in the dark."
Sienna was glaring at her daughter as Emily entered, her anger matched by her obvious fear for Marion's safety.
"And the streets are very unsafe."
"I didn't go out of Sorcerer's Row,"
Marion snapped back. She looked, just for a moment, like a younger version of her mother.
"Mother, I was perfectly safe."
50 people were killed last night, and that's just the ones we know about," Sienna said. I can't even guess at how many were injured or raped or...
She slammed her hand down on the table.
I gave you specific instructions to stay in the house. Why didn't you listen to me?
I was safe, Marion insisted. I'm not a child.
You are a child, Sienna said. You are too young to learn magic, too young to get married, too young to be on the streets on your own. And you are too young to decide for yourself what orders can be safely ignored and...
Marion glared at her mother, then switched her glare to Emily.
I...
Her face flushed, brightly. She'd been so angry that she hadn't even noticed Emily and Frida entering the room. Abruptly, she pushed past them and stormed out, her footsteps echoing as she stomped up the stairs. Sienna moved to follow her, then stopped herself. Emily did her best to avoid the older woman's eyes, wishing she'd thought to stay in her bedroom. She'd never enjoyed being told off in front of the entire class, and it had to be a good deal worse in one's home.
"I apologize for my daughter, Emily," Sienna said finally. She sounded as though she was trying to keep her temper in check.
"Rest assured, she will be suitably punished." "She's under a lot of stress," Emily said, trying to be kind. Marion had lost a brother.
Her conduct is inexcusable," Sienna said. "Caleb had to spend hours looking for her."
Her face darkened as she motioned for Emily and Frida to sit. Karen entered a moment later, carrying two plates of scrambled eggs and bread. She looked weepy, suggesting Sienna had already told her off for letting her younger sister leave the house. Emily didn't blame Sienna for being angry, but she shook her head inwardly. At least Sienna gave a damn about her children. Emily's mother hadn't cared about anything but the next bottle of cheap wine.
"The Guild Council has decided that there will be a meeting at noon," Sienna said, as Emily tucked into the food.
"Apparently Clerk Harriman will be presenting his findings. I've taken the liberty of arranging places for us."
"Thank you," Emily said.
"Karen Croce and Marion will remain here," Sienna added. She looked older, just for a second.
"The mob burnt down Vesperian's mansion last night."
"I heard," Emily said. "Was anyone hurt?"
"No."
Sienna sat down, resting her fingers on the table.
"The servants managed to get out before the blaze consumed them."
There was a pause.
"He didn't even own it," she added. "The poor bastard who did own it will now have to rebuild the mansion or surrender the land back to the council. I don't know if he can afford to rebuild it."
Caleb entered the room before Emily could think of a reply. She looked up and frowned in concern. Caleb looked tired, dark rings clearly visible around his eyes. He held himself as if the only thing keeping him upright was sheer force of will. His clothes looked as if he'd slept in them. Emily opened her mouth to tell him to go back to bed, then reminded herself, sharply, that she wasn't his mother. Sienna would tell him to get some rest if necessary.
"Get a drink, then a shower," Sienna ordered curtly.
She glanced at the clock.
"We'll be leaving in an hour."
Emily met Caleb's eyes.
"Are you all right?"
"I only had a couple of hours to sleep," Caleb said. "I'll be fine. The little brat led me quite a dance."
"I'll show you how to use the tracking spells." Sienna rose, looking regretful.
"And I also need to discuss matters with her."
Caleb nodded.
"Did Father come home?"
"He's still with the city guard." Sienna sounded as though she couldn't care less, but Emily caught a hint of worry in her eyes. General Pollock was a brave man, yet he had no magic to protect himself. A dozen rioters could beat him to death if they wished.
"I dare say we won't be seeing much of him until the crisis is over."
Her eyes moved to Karen.
"See to it that neither of your siblings leave the house until we return, and if they won't stay still, use magic."
Karen looked down at the table.
"Yes, Mother."
Emily watched Sienna go, feeling a stab of sympathy for Marion. Sienna didn't seem the type of person to bother trying to find out why her daughter was so upset. And yet, she didn't blame Sienna for being concerned and angry that her youngest daughter had deliberately put herself in danger. The rioters who'd attacked her on the streets would have no trouble tearing Marion to pieces if they'd caught her instead.
"Change into trousers," Caleb advised when they'd finished their breakfast. "You might have to run."
"Good thinking,"
Frida said. Emily shot her a sharp glance.
"Or we could just teleport home."
Caleb looked back at her evenly.
"Can you teleport?"
"Emily can,"
Frida said.
"Then you'd better be prepared to run."
Caleb sounded as though he was trying hard to keep himself under control.
"Because, you know, you might get separated in the crowd."
He cleared his throat.
"Emily, you can't teleport into Sorcerer's Row," he said. "If you have to teleport out, aim for somewhere on the far side of the river."
Emily nodded. There were enough wards surrounding the house to make teleporting extremely dangerous, if not fatal. She was fairly sure it would be fatal. Lady Barb and Void had warned her that teleport spells were easy to disrupt, even by low-power magicians. A lucky magician might just realize the danger in time to abort, but the timing would have to be terrifyingly precise. She doubted she could handle it. "I'll be careful," she promised. "What happened last night?"
"She wasn't with her friend," Caleb said flatly. "I don't know where she was."
"Ouch," Emily said. Alba had sneaked out too, she recalled. But Marion was too young for a boyfriend, wasn't she? Is she going to be all right?
Probably.
Caleb smiled humorlessly. At her age, getting grounded is a fate worse than death. Emily nodded as they hurried back up the stairs to change. Marion didn't have a computer, let alone the internet. She didn't even have television or a radio. Being locked in the house would probably feel like going to prison. There were books, of course, but Emily suspected Sienna would confiscate any novels Marion owned. By the end of the day, Marion might be begging for something, anything, to do. Maybe her sister would put her to work cleaning the house. God alone knew what had happened to the maid. She changed into her borrowed trousers and a shirt, then hurried downstairs. Sienna stood at the door, speaking to a young man Emily didn't recognize. He nodded politely to her, then hurried away as Caleb and Frida joined them. Caleb had changed, but he still looked tired and wan. Frida looked surprisingly neat in a black shirt and trousers. Sienna flickered her eyes over the shirt, a size or two too tight, Emily noted, and then looked away. Emily was silently glad her shirt wasn't so daring.
"The meeting will be held in the square." Sienna waved a hand in the air, adjusting the wards before she opened the door. "We have to hurry."
Emily took a breath as they stepped into the morning air. A faint taste of ashes hung over the city. Glancing north, she saw a plume of smoke rising into the air. Vesperian's mansion was still burning then. She wondered, absently, what spells had been used to make the blaze impossible to subdue. There were several that needed specific countermeasures to stop, if she recalled correctly. Or maybe the firemen had lost money, too, and simply decided to let the building burn to the ground. The streets were crowded with hundreds of people making their way towards the guild hall, some carrying weapons and wearing armor. Emily couldn't help staring at a man who carried a sword almost as big as himself, wondering how he managed to swing the blade. Someone had probably charmed it, she decided. Sergeant Miles had taught her a great deal about charmed weapons, although he'd always been careful to point out that a charmed blade didn't make the bearer invincible. A blade could be charmed to cut through anything, or weigh as much as a feather, but a crafty magician could always undo the spell at the worst possible time.
"Too many people on the street," Frida muttered, as they turned into the square. "Is the entire city here?"
"No." Caleb glanced from side to side, his eyes grim. "But it will certainly feel that way." Emily nodded. The square, just in front of the guild hall, was crammed with people, from wealthy merchants, industrialists, and priests in fine robes, to commoners wearing clothes that had clearly been handed down from generation to generation. Many of the latter carried pieces of paper bearing the stylized V. Their notes, Emily realized. Others held weapons or muttered angrily to their neighbors as rumors sped through the crowd at terrifying speed. She couldn't recall seeing commoners carrying so many weapons before, but beneficence wasn't Zangaria. Anyone who wasn't actually a slave could carry a sword, if he could afford it.
"That's Speaker Janus," Caleb said, as Sienna led them towards the small gathering of dignitaries outside the guild hall. "He's talking to Father."
Emily followed his gaze. A tall, thin man, with dark hair and a goatee that reminded her of Disney's Jafar, stood next to General Pollock, speaking to him. The red robe he wore was identical to the robes worn by his followers, save for the gold trim around the hood. Emily glanced around, noting that there were nearly 30 hands of justice within eyeshot, and probably many more out of sight. She couldn't help thinking that they were waiting for something. But what?
"Lady Emily," a voice said.
She turned to see Harriman, wearing a gray suit that matched his personality.
"I trust you slept well."
"Well enough," Emily lied.
"Good. Good," Harriman said.
She thought she heard fear in his voice as he held up a set of papers.
I have to speak to the crowd once the Grand Guildmaster has made his speech.
Emily winced in sympathy. She disliked the idea of speaking in front of a crowd, too, even when the crowd wasn't angry. Harriman might put the mob to sleep if he recited facts and figures at them, but they'd wake up angry. She silently prepared a number of spells as a single trumpet blew, bringing silence in its wake. The meeting was about to begin. She reached for Caleb's hand and held it tightly as Grand Guildmaster Jaleel took the stand.
"Citizens," he said calmly.
His voice was boosted by a spell, ensuring everyone could hear.
"Our city stands tall against the waves. Our city, get to the money!" someone shouted.
Others took up the cry.
"Get to the money!" "He owes me!" someone else shouted. "Where's the money?"
"Hecklers," Sienna muttered. She sounded troubled.
"Paid hecklers."
Jaleel cleared his throat.
"We have faced many crises in our time," he added, grimly continuing with his speech.
Emily wasn't sure if he was being brave or stupid.
"And yet we have overcome them all." "Where's my money?" a heckler shouted. "He stole it all!"
The crowd roared with anger. Emily glanced from side to side, realizing there were too many people crammed into the square for the guards to restore order. The hecklers continued to shout, their taunts boosted by their own magic. Jaleel, not used to such blatant disrespect, paled rapidly. Pieces of rotten fruit began to fly through the air.
"Give us back our money!" a voice shouted.
Or was it many voices?
"Give us back our money!"
Jaleel steadied himself.
"Clerk Harriman has inspected the accounts," he said, holding on to the podium as though it were a life preserver.
Surprisingly, the roar quietened, and yet odd flickers of magic were running through the air.
"He will now present his findings."
Caleb squeezed Emily's hand as Harriman walked forward and took the podium. He shook like a leaf. Emily silently prayed for him as she peered around the square. General Pollock muttered orders to a messenger. Beside him, Janus watched Harriman, a faint smile flittering over his face. Their eyes met just for a second. Emily thought she sensed something looking back at her through Janus's eyes.
"My team has gone through the first set of accounts."
Harriman looked down at his set of notes. Emily wondered if he'd planned a long speech before seeing the angry crowd.
"We have determined that the Vesperian Track and Vesperian Industries has debts of roughly 75,000 crowns."
The crowd seemed too stunned to respond. It was a figure so immense as to be beyond easy comprehension. On Earth it would have been billions, perhaps trillions of dollars, enough money to buy or run a country. And it existed. It had existed as nothing more than pieces of paper. Vesperian hadn't had a hope of paying off his debts. "And the total keeps going up," Emily thought. "When will it stop?" Harriman paused.
"The estate's total assets are worth no more than 12,000 crowns," he added after a moment.
Clearly, Emily noted, he'd gone back to the account books in the morning. She wasn't sure if she should salute his dedication or reprimand him for making matters worse.
"This is, in many ways, a best-case estimate. The sellable value of his goods may be much lower." "I want my money back!" someone shouted.
Again, others took up the cry. Harriman stood at the podium and waited, holding himself upright through sheer, bloody-minded determination. Emily felt a flicker of admiration as the noise grew louder.
"I want my money!"
"We are currently assessing the precise debts owed by the estate to his creditors," Harriman continued. "Once we have a clear picture..."
"Theft!" a heckler shouted. "I paid 100 crowns to that bastard!"
"1,000!
Someone else shouted.
"I want my money!"
Emily glanced at Caleb. He looked pale. The crowd moved, a handful of members hurrying off while others started towards the podium. Harriman still stood there, one hand crumpling his papers. He knew, as well as she did, that there was no hope of recouping enough money to pay all the investors. The rich men, the industrialists, would be paid first. There wouldn't be enough left for the others.
And judging by the growing anger running through the crowd, the realization was finally sinking in.
I want my money back, a woman yelled. I have debts.
Give me my money,
a man added. Emily ducked as pieces of rotting fruit started to shower down on the podium. She felt panic howling at the back of her mind. A man could fall in the crowd and be trampled to death before anyone realized he was in trouble.
Give me the money!
Jaleel hurried forward.
Be calm, he pleaded. We'll give you the money.
The crowd roared. Emily winced as she pulled back, grabbing hold of Frida's arm and pulling her back, too. It had been precisely the wrong thing to say. The crowd was a wild animal now, scared of the future and whipped up by hecklers. Someone had put the hecklers there, she thought. She looked around, desperately. Janus walked calmly towards the podium, a faint smirk clearly visible on his face. There was no sign of General Pollock. Or Harmon.
Thesperian's goods will be sold to buy back the notes, Jaleel insisted.
It had no effect. Of course it didn't. Harriman had told the crowd that Vesperian's total assets couldn't be sold for more than a fraction of the debt.
You have led this city astray for far too long, a new voice said.
Janus stood by the podium, looking as calm and composed as a man ordering dinner. There was a sense of righteousness around him that transcended the chaos.
You have led your people into sin and depravity. No more.
Silence fell like a hammer blow. The crowd milled uneasily, angry yet unwilling to challenge the priest. It was a long, chilling moment before Janus spoke again.
This is the time of justice.
And then Emily sensed the presence. Chapter 22. She turned slowly. The presence was overwhelmingly powerful. It was like staring into a bright light, yet being unable to look away. The entity stood at the edge of the square, its sheer power so staggering that her knees threatened to buckle. It thrust itself into her awareness, existing on multiple levels at once. She thought, suddenly, of the nexus points. The entity wasn't even doing it deliberately, part of her mind noted. It was so powerful she couldn't help looking at it. Its power thrummed on the air, deafening her. She wanted to kneel, to prostrate herself before its immensity. It was so real that she felt like an illusion, like something that didn't quite exist. No wonder Alba had been so badly shocked when she'd seen the entity. No wonder she'd termed it a god. And yet something kept Emily from surrendering her will completely. It could be a trick. She forced herself to take a mental step back, then another. The entity stood there, her senses swimming as she tried to study it. It was huge, infinitely large, so enormous its head touched the sky. She tried to comprehend how it could be both utterly immense and yet standing calmly in the square. Her head spun as she pulled back again, glancing from side to side. A good third of the crowd had fallen to the ground, prostrating themselves in front of the entity. Others cowered or ran in all directions. It's a lie, she thought, as she touched her chest. The rune wasn't burning, which meant... what? No subtle magic? A compulsion on such a scale wasn't impossible if one had enough power. But there was no nexus point in the city, was there? No one could have kept a nexus point hidden, not when anyone with a hint of magic could detect it. It has to be a lie. Caleb coughed, tugging at her arm. Emily realized, dully, that her hand was throbbing in pain. Caleb had squeezed her tightly enough to hurt. And yet she'd barely noticed. No, she hadn't noticed. She pulled her hand free, then glanced at Frida. Her friend was wavering, looking as if she might fall to the ground at any moment. Emily caught her shoulder and yanked her back, hoping to break the connection. Frida jumped, then looked away from the entity.
I am justice, the entity said.
There was so much power in its voice, so much compulsion, that it was hard, very hard, to doubt it. It spoke as if it, and it alone, possessed the truth.
I have been summoned to tend to my cause.
The power surged suddenly as the entity raised its hand. A bolt of lightning flashed from its fingertips, reaching out to strike Jaleel. The older man screamed in pain as his entire body blazed white. then turned to stone. Emily knew, on a level that could not be denied, that he died, and that he died in agony. The knowledge beat on the air like a giant heartbeat, impressing itself into her soul. She looked around as the lightning flashed again, seeking out Guildmaster Merriam. Merriam screamed and ran, but the lightning followed him. There was something cruel in the spell, Emily thought dully. It moved in slow motion, just slowly enough to give the impression that Merriam might manage to escape. But it was a lie. She looked away, shielding her eyes as Merriam died. Too much power, she thought numbly. It hurt to even try to probe it with her senses, but she had to try. Even a protected nexus point didn't have so much calculated malice woven into its very nature. The entity was designed to hurt anyone who tried to analyze it. She found her head starting to hurt, again, as she tried to study the power. There's too much power being thrown around too freely. Her mind raced as Sienna pulled her back, shouting for her husband. A necromancer would have such power, but almost no control. Was she looking at a necromancer wrapped in an overpowered glamour? It didn't seem possible. A necromancer would have slaughtered the entire crowd by now, instead of merely making examples out of a couple of guilty parties. She glanced back at the entity, trying to focus on how it channeled and used power. But it was too powerful for her to track the ebb and flow of magic surrounding it.
"This city will come to know the way," the entity boomed.
Its presence seemed to grow stronger, but this time Emily was ready for it.
"The sinners will be purged. A day of peace will rise."
Emily sensed another surge of magic and turned her head. A set of sorcerers were screaming defiance, hurling dozens of spells at the entity. Justice made no attempt to move, let alone to defend itself. The spell struck its exterior and vanished, snapping out of existence as if they'd struck a brick wall. And yet, Emily reached out again, frowning as she watched the second set of spells strike home. The magic was unraveling, the mana breaking down and falling towards the entity. "They're fading it," she realized.
"Justice will be done."
The three sorcerers suddenly blazed with white light. When it faded, three more statues stood in the center of the square. The crowd broke, half falling on their knees, the other half running in all directions. Fist fights broke out as they struggled to get out of the square before it was too late, sorcerers and magic users panicking and lashing out with their powers as they ran. Hundreds of people were going to die, Emily realized dully, trampled to death when they fell to the ground. Justice, whatever it actually was, would be responsible for them all. She felt the presence ebb just a little and turned to look. Justice seemed smaller somehow, yet still impressive. His face was indistinct, but rigid. She saw flashes of his features rather than a complete picture. A black beard, flashing black eyes, a stern chin, a muscular body. She thought he was garbed, but his clothes refused to come into focus. She couldn't help thinking of Judge Dredd, or perhaps an Old Testament prophet coming home to lay down the law. There was a solidity about him that caught her attention, something that convinced her she wasn't looking at an illusion. "This way," Sienna snapped. Emily caught sight of Janus as Sienna led the way towards the guild hall itself. The speaker stood beside the podium, his hands clasped behind his back as he watched the carnage. He looked at Emily just for a moment and nodded politely to her. There was an oddly beneficent look on his face that was more terrifying, somehow, than any smirk or scream of rage. "He did this," Emily thought. The screams were growing louder. He knew it would happen. She saw Harriman lying on the ground near the doors. Blood poured from a nasty gash on his forehead. She hurried over to him, but it was too late. He made a gurgling sound, then died in her arms. She stared down at him for a long moment, knowing that she didn't have the time to try to get his body out of the square. He'd deserved better than to die in such a way. She took his papers, then stood. Janus had turned back to look at her. Magic boiled around her fingertips, demanding release as he watched her through cold, dark eyes. She could kill him right now. She could end it. But she knew it wouldn't be enough to save the city. Justice's mere presence would change everything, even if Janus died. They had to find a way to stop something that might as well be a god.
Emily! Caleb shouted.
Emily turned to run. She felt tired, her legs starting to hurt. She felt almost as if she were swimming through molasses. It felt like a nightmare when she couldn't move, no matter how much she tried. She knew all too well that something was coming up behind her. She could feel the presence growing stronger, feel her knees threatening to bend. Her body wanted to turn, to surrender. She raised her hand somehow and slapped her face. The pain gave her just enough focus to break free and run.
"We have to get out the rear," Sienna snapped. "Hurry!"
She tossed a spell at the doors as soon as they were inside the building, slamming them closed. A second spell locked them, although Emily suspected it wouldn't last more than a few seconds. Justice had more than enough power to reduce the entire building to dust if it wanted. She heard the sound of falling masonry in the distance as the ground shook. She wondered, as she followed Sienna and the others through a maze of ornate corridors, if the island was tectonically stable. A major earthquake might do real damage. Or a volcano, she thought. There were stories about magicians who'd triggered volcanoes, although most of them were cautionary tales. What if the city was built on a dead volcano? The building shook again. A large painting of a stern-looking guildmaster fell from the wall and crashed to the floor. Others followed, forcing them to jump. A lantern dropped from a great height and smashed against a tapestry, starting a fire. Sienna snapped a spell at it, quenching the flames in a heartbeat, but it was only a matter of time until something else caught fire. The shaking was growing worse.
"All will be judged," Justice said.
The voice was so near that Emily glanced over her shoulder, half expecting to see the entity right behind her. Given its power, she suspected the entire city could hear it.
"You will all come to me in time."
Sienna threw the back door open. A small group of Hands of Justice stood behind the guild hall, handing out weapons. Sienna didn't hesitate. She raised a hand and threw a spell at them, knocking them to the ground. Emily's hair stood on end as she sensed the residues. It was a killing spell, but not one she knew. Whatever it was, she thought, as she watched Frida scoop up a short sword. The hands hadn't stood a chance.
"Stop!"
a voice shouted. A spell flashed over their heads.
"Stop and be judged!"
Emily turned. A dozen more hands ran towards them. One of them waved a hand in the air, threateningly. The others carried swords and staffs, the latter, perhaps, charged with magic. She noticed, as she readied a spell of her own, that they wore different insignia over their chests. It looked like a clenched fist.
"No,"
Sienna said. She threw a spell at the leader, knocking him back. Emily and Caleb threw fireballs too, then force punches. Frida cast a spell of her own, a lightning storm that lashed out at everyone within range. The hands scattered, then regrouped. Sienna struck them with another force punch, chanting words under her breath. The small group was flung in all directions with terrifying force.
"All will be judged,"
Justice said.
"Run," Sienna ordered.
Emily turned and ran for her life, followed by Frida and Caleb. She was vaguely aware of Sienna doing something before she ran too, something that sent more shivers down her spine as the spell detonated. The screams behind her cut off abruptly as Sienna joined them, pounding down the street. Thankfully, the streets were largely empty. Emily didn't want to think about what that meant for the crowd left in the square.
"Janus knew!"
Emily reached out with her senses. Justice was easy to sense, just like a nexus point, a flickering awareness of presence that seemed to ebb and flow around the center of the city. And yet, there was something odd about it, something that nagged at the back of her mind. What was it?
"He knew something was going to happen. Less talking, more running."
Sienna didn't even sound winded. "We have to get back home before anything else." Emily nodded. Sienna was right. And yet, she couldn't keep herself from thinking. Janus had known right from the start that something would happen. No, perhaps it was worse. Vesperian's death hadn't started the whole nightmare, making it impossible for the city's population to delude themselves any longer. It had only made matters worse. If Janus knew the whole scheme was about to collapse, she thought, as she forced herself to run faster, he might have tried to take advantage of it, and yet,
Stop! A voice bellowed.
Sienna swore out loud as they came face to face with another group of men. They carried staffs and wore silver armor covered in runes. Emily gritted her teeth, remembering the first time she'd faced men in protective armor. They could be beaten, she knew, but it took time. Or she could use a larger spell.
Emily! Frida said. Watch me!
Emily had only a second to realize what Frida intended to do before it was too late. Her body seemed to blur as she threw herself at the hands, her sword flashing like lightning in the bright sunlight. She moved too fast to be seen clearly, slashing out at the men before they could react. Emily gritted her teeth as she saw 5 men fall in less than 30 seconds, knowing that Frida would pay a high price for her bravery. The berserker spell was too dangerous to use for long. Emily had never dared use it since her first year at Whitehall. A man broke free and hurled himself at Sienna. She darted to one side, yanking a virgin dagger out of nowhere and inserting it into his eye. He yelped and dropped to the ground, dead. Emily reached for her own magic as another man came at her, only to have Caleb slam a force punch into his chest. The sheer force of the impact picked the man up and blasted him into a building hard enough to leave a mark. He slumped to the ground, his legs twisted out of shape. He might never walk again.
Now, Sienna said.
Emily looked up, then ran forward. Frida had killed all of her enemies, but now she twitched helplessly as the spell ran its course. Emily readied a cancellation spell as she reached Frida, casting the spell a moment before Frida lunged at her, too far gone to tell the difference between a friend and an enemy. Emily felt a flash of pure horror, then grunted in pain as Frida bowled her over, landing hard on the solid pavement. Frida drew back a fist, then stopped a moment before she slammed it into Emily's throat.
Emily!
Frida said.
I...
She sagged, nearly falling on top of Emily. Sienna helped Frida to her feet, then picked her up and slung her over her shoulder in a fireman's carry. Frida looked as though she was struggling to stay awake, even though her body must be screaming for rest. Berserker drained the caster completely, unless it was stopped.
Take the armor, Sienna ordered. Hurry!
Emily glanced in both directions, then hastily started to undo the first set of armor. Warding spells snapped at her fingertips, but they were already fading. It might be hard, she thought, to re-enchant the armor, but it might come in handy for something. She collected 3 sets of intact breastplates, then stood. Caleb had removed 4 sets himself. She looked down at the bodies for a moment, wondering what they'd been thinking when they'd joined the hands, before following Sienna down the road. The noise behind them grew louder. I can sense the entity, she thought. She didn't want to label it with a name, even in the privacy of her own mind, and so can everyone else. She sagged in relief as they finally reached Sorcerer's Row, passing through a tangled network of wards guarded by 12 sorcerers. Sienna slowed to talk to one of them, explaining what had happened in a hushed voice. The sorcerers didn't look as though they believed her, which didn't come as a complete surprise. Emily had seen the entity firsthand, and part of her mind refused to believe it. You've seen demons, her own thoughts reminded her. Why not a god?
Come inside, Sienna said.
Emily looked back towards the center of town. More smoke was rising, suggesting... What? That the guild hall had caught fire? Or that other buildings were burning too? Or... She could still sense the presence, even at a distance. It pervaded her thoughts, an itch she couldn't scratch, taunting her with its sheer presence. The sensation grew stronger the more she looked, drawing her back. She shook her head, pinching herself. God alone knew what would happen when they slept. We'll have to tune the wards to block it out, she thought. If we can...
Emily, Caleb hissed.
General Pollock was still out there somewhere. Emily hoped he was safe, but she knew he'd been in the midst of the crowd. What if he was dead? Or compelled to kneel before the entity and pledge himself to its service? What if... Her heart twisted in pain at the thought of more misery being inflicted on Caleb and his family. They deserved a break, didn't they? They deserved a chance to heal from their earlier wounds. She closed her eyes for a long moment, then turned and walked through the door. Behind her, Caleb slammed it shut. Chapter 23. It was blessedly quiet inside the house. Emily allowed herself a sigh of naked relief as she felt the entity's presence fade from her mind. Whatever it was, the wards kept it out. Oddly, she found that reassuring. A real